Du hörst Duolog X, der besondere Duolog mit besonderen Gästen. Diesmal mit Matthew Wilcoxon aus Washington, D.C. Okay, welcome here to Duolog. Duolog is usually my podcast with my good friend Jürgen, but today is a different situation. You can hear it from me trying to speak English. I haven't done that really for a long time. But the occasion here is that I have reached out to an old friend from my studies in Los Angeles at the Biola University, Talbot. We have been there together in some courses and seminaries. And this is Matthew Wilcoxon. Welcome, Matthew, on my podcast.
Thank you, Carl. It is great to be here.
Okay, so I thought this special situation we are in right now with this corona pandemic going around the world and changing a lot of lives would be a great moment to reflect upon what it has influenced in our everyday lives, in our churches, in our ministries, in our lives as families. Because this is especially a unique moment even in church history, because there has never been something like that before. So I thought that would be great to just reach out to some people who are inflicted by that or influenced by that, like you, Matthew. And I would like to hear from you your views on that and how it had changed your ministry and your service and what it has done to your church where you're in. But first, I would like to hear from you or get an introduction from you for our listeners. Who are you, Matthew, and what are you doing? What is your type of ministry you're doing right now?
I am an associate rector, a kind of second in command at an Anglican church in Washington, D.C. on Capitol Hill. So we are kind of high church evangelical Anglican church located just about less than a kilometer from the Capitol building here in Washington, D.C. So I do a bit of everything here at our church, from preaching and pastoral counseling to running the staff and things like that. It's been 12 years since we've seen each other, but I will have to tell your listeners that you made a great impression on all of Talbot as, wow, are all the German theology students just this amazing and bright? So it's good to see you again.
Thanks. You told just right now that you are in Washington, D.C., so you are kind of in the center of American political life and decision-making right now. I don't want to go too much into politics. We can just leave that aside. That's a hot topic, so we will just drop that a little bit. But it's still fascinating for me to hear your view on the situation right now in the U.S., in Washington, how public life has changed and all the things that are happening right now and what kind of emotional situation there is in the U.S. right now.
So in Washington specifically, it's pretty interesting. In some ways, we're the least affected by the pandemic, at least so far. Many of the people here work in government-related work, and so their jobs are fairly secure. At the same time, there's a significant population of the city that doesn't work in those industries, and those are often African American people, and so there is a real vulnerable side to the city here. So it's an interesting experience in that regard, and yet, as you mentioned, DC is also the center of a lot of decision making and policy making around how we're going to respond, It's a strange time. I think you can see real shift in the way of thinking, that there's often these debates in Washington about how much the government should or shouldn't do in a very distinctly American way. And those things are kind of being exploded. The government is trying to do a lot of things in terms of especially the financial policies that they're making. And but anyways, I mean, in D.C. specifically, we are a kind of we're not like New York City, but a burgeoning hotspot for the infection. It's been on the rise. So everyone's at home. I've never seen the city so quiet. And people are really abiding by the stay-at-home order. And things are shut down. And it's very strange.
Okay, yeah. So it's similar to here. Things are shut down here as well. And I think, I mean, Washington is a huge city compared to where I'm living right now. But I share your feeling that it's really strange. It's not as much, yeah, you don't get that impression that much here around. But from what you see in the bigger cities, it's quite similar. But what is your situation for you as a minister or for your church? I mean, we here in Germany have huge discussions about because the religious freedom is a constitutional right here as well, and it's more so in the U.S. with the First Amendment, and it's a huge debate here if the state has the power to limit church services. What's the situation for you in your church in the regards with church services? Are you allowed to meet, or is that forbidden, or what's the state for you right now?
So our mayor, D.C. is a federal district. It's run by a council and a mayor, essentially, although the federal government has the purse strings. But our mayor, with her stay-at-home order, did make a caveat that religious services can be essential. At the same time, there is almost no religious service happening in the city. I think even though we could technically gather, our parishioners wouldn't go for it, and we don't feel that it would be wise right now. So we do have the right to do it, but we want to be good neighbors and good citizens, and we also just want to keep our people safe. So we're able to, but we're not yet there. We're waiting to hear kind of when things can start to reopen on the business side. We think that's the place to do it. What we've been doing since, I guess, mid-March is we've gone to online services. We do a kind of fireside chat, if that reference makes any sense to a German audience. But we do it in a living room. We've maintained a semblance of our liturgy, even though we're not having the Eucharist. We're keeping the same prayers. And then we're doing a sermon kind of sitting down, and we've done it live with just a few of our staff members to provide a sense of authenticity and continuation as well with our church. And people have tuned in. Our church has been very active. We have a listserv, and so we have a virtual greeting time where people send photos of themselves doing worship at home. Around to the listserv, so we're all kind of seeing each other, and then we've got a few things midweek. We actually have morning and evening prayer services from the Anglican Book of Common Prayer that happen morning and evening, Monday through Saturday, and so and then we've continued some classes online, and our focus has been on the church side primarily. How do we keep are people connected to one another and to the body of Christ during this time? Another thing that we've done is we have stood up this kind of system. It's very simple, but with our diaconate, where we have on our website a forum where people both from the church and then from outside the church in the community can request care. And this can be financial care. This can be, you know, I'm a vulnerable person and I can't go out at all, so I need someone to deliver groceries to me and things like that. And so we've had people sign up, and then we've also had a forum where people in our church can sign up to be the helpers. Mm-hmm. And so we've got, I would say about 75% of the people in our church have filled out the form to say, here's all the ways I can help. And then we've started fielding an increasing number of requests from the community for people that need transportation to essential medical appointments or grocery delivery or benevolence kind of funds. And so it's been really neat to see in a lot of ways that we've actually made more connections with people in the community and people that we would normally struggle to connect with than we would in ordinary times. So that's kind of what we're doing as a church right now. In terms of the first 5 or 6 weeks, I'd say it's been great, actually, in some ways. It's hard. Everyone's hard for, but the church things have been a bright spot. I do think it's starting to get a little old for people, and it's going to get harder if this continues on for months and months and months.
So from what I'm hearing you, the response in the community was pretty good for the changes you have made as a church or for the things you have changed. What's with the church members? So how would they, what's their response? You said it's getting a little bit old. So people are getting unrest are unrestful. But how is their reaction to all these changes from your members? And how many members do you have? How big is your church?
Our church is about 250 people.
Mm-hmm.
The response from our church members has been really positive so far. And we have we're not a huge church, but medium-sized, and we have a high level of commitment. And so people have been tuning in. They've been taking part in these virtual things that we have. I'm just thinking that as it goes on, it becomes harder and harder to sort of sustain this without the personal connection. We also have a lot of single people. Washington, D.C. has the highest per capita number of millennials in the United States for a metro area. And so that's, people in their 20s, 30s. And a lot of them are single. They're professionals. They haven't wed. They don't have families yet. And those people are really, really struggling with some of this. Families are struggling too, but in a different way. But there's a lot of people that are struggling with loneliness and a sense of isolation, mental health, anxiety, and depression. And so, as it goes on, I do worry about our ability to care for them and their ability to kind of continue on this trajectory.
Okay. So what has changed for you personally in your ministry? I mean, one thing is the services are not happening as they happened before, but what else has changed for you? How does this affect your ministry and your personal schedule, something like that?
Yeah, so I'm home constantly. I have three children. They're age 3, 9, and 10 years old. And so there's a sense in which I'm much less engaged in the work of the ministry because having a 3-year-old that you're trying to homeschool and he's distracting the 9 and 10-year-old who you're trying to homeschool is really difficult. So there's that dynamic. And then I have, continued to try to do what I can as a pastor. So I've been doing premarital counseling for 4 different couples that are young couples that are getting married this summer. And so I've continued doing that each week, via Zoom or some other service. All of those couples have now postponed their weddings, but I've continued with the counseling. So in terms of my personal schedule, it's been very hectic. I've tried to keep some rhythm and routine in terms of spiritual disciplines and having some role sharing with my wife and giving each other a little bit of free time. Ministry has been hosting book discussions or Bible studies on Zoom, preaching about half the time on our online service, and thinking of ways to keep people in the church connected to one another. It's not been my favorite season. The first few weeks were great. They were kind of novel, but I'm to be honest, feeling a bit exhausted by the whole thing.
Hmm. Yeah, that's my feeling as well. So especially after Easter, planning our Easter services, I had the idea of doing four video services for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And the next week, I was really exhausted. I couldn't do anything anymore because there was a lot of work. We did Thursday, I did a video Eucharist service, and that was really interesting to film that and think through. Connecting to that idea of the Eucharist, I have with you a really theological brain here, because you have been doing a PhD in Australia, so you're not just any pastor, but you have some solid theological background. And so I would like to take a few moments and ask you about some ethical and theological challenges and conflicts you might be seeing about or through this situation. We have a lot of discussions here about, for example, our official church or the Lutheran churches and Catholic churches were forbidding Eucharist through video, and there are questions about ecclesiology. What's church when you cannot meet in a building? Where do you have services to be real services, and all these questions, prayers, and so on. And you are from quite a different background than me. You're Anglican church. I'm Baptist pastor. So there are quite differences in our theological backgrounds from this. And I would like to see your perspective, where you see some theological challenges arising out of this situation and
ecclesiological
challenges you see from arising out of this situation.
Well, so far, I do think the Eucharist, the Lord's Supper, has been the hardest thing for us just spiritually to go without. I don't know about your church, but you know, it's central to us to receive the Eucharist every week as part of our worship. Although it's not mandatory in any sense, but that's our practice. And so, you know, for us, there's no question of a quote unquote virtual Eucharist. First of all, there has to be an ordained priest that blesses, consecrates the actual elements. We did do something interesting for Easter that some people might object to. I think because my reasoning on it is that it fits within our canonical structure. And that is that we filmed a service of a Eucharist with about five or six of us present. And so if you've got a few gathered and there's a priest, you can have a Eucharist service as long as it's done according to the liturgy. And so that's a real Eucharist service. And at that, we blessed and consecrated elements for in abundance of what we needed. And there's a tradition of, you know, the reserved sacrament where it can be taken to those who are unable to attend. So what we did is we delivered that to our church members. They signed up on a form. We delivered it to them. And then we uploaded the video of the Eucharist service, and they were able to watch the service and to receive the Eucharistic elements that were actually present there. And so we did that for Easter. There's a part of us, we don't want to do that every week because we do think it's highly irregular. And yet we thought for Easter on a pastoral level that this was justifiable in terms of theology and tradition, and also for this special occasion to love our members. So there's a mixture of theology and pragmatism in some of this for us at this point. It's harder to think about what the Eucharist looks like going forward. Our Eucharistic celebration involves an actual real loaf and a cup. You know, we don't do, you know, we break it and we all eat from one loaf and drink from one cup. And that's, I guess in some ways it doesn't, there's no rule that it has to be that way in our theology, but it's our practice. And we think this, the symbol is very significant. So it's like, what does this look like going forward for us? Do we go with individual pieces that are sort of sanitarily packaged beforehand and things like that, that we would militate against normally. And we've got to think through what that looks like. I think there's a real, I've thought of this in terms of Jesus' commandment or Jesus' interaction with the Sabbath tradition. And he breaks longstanding traditions and he says, you know, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And so some of these things that are traditions, as central as they are, there's a place and a time for us to modify them for the preservation of life. And so as I look at this emergency situation, which could be, you know, a year, hopefully not a lot longer from now, we might have to make some significant changes that we wouldn't want to be longstanding. And I think we can do that for the sake of the preservation of life of people. So, you know, and there are times, you know, in the 1919 pandemic where churches had to go without the Eucharist for some time. This is, you know, we need a lens through which to process some of this. And I think that's what I've been reaching for biblically a little bit, is what is God doing? What is this season, this fallow season, this season of letting things lie fallow, of fasting even from the Eucharist, of a kind of coming under a sort of extended Lenten season, and thinking about things, repentance, and you know, it's been hard, but we're wrestling with it. I don't know that I have any clear answers for you. I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's a thinking in progress. So that's my situation as well. Because I mean, my Baptist background, we are not as liturgically fixed as some other church traditions, and so we have a lot of more, much more freedom in some ways in doing things differently, because much more is just symbolic and can happen on different levels and is much more pragmatic maybe on some other levels. On the other hand, there are still questions for what is a church if it doesn't gather on Sunday morning, and what makes a church, and how can we go on forward if we have a split church, for example? We are right now setting up a live streaming technology because we are expecting that our senior members are not coming back for a long time into Sunday services. And so we want to have them with us if they are not with us. And so all these questions are there. And especially as for my role as a pastor, if you are not really, you cannot really visit people because we have this situation. You can call them, you can do this or that, but it's still limited. And so my role is changing. Our situation as a church is changing. And so there's a lot of dynamics there that are not clearly foreseeable for the future, what this means and how this changes maybe permanently how we understand ourselves.
Can I ask you, I know you're the interviewer here, but...
No, that's forbidden. Don't do that. No, it's okay. Go on.
I mean, what time frame are you making plans in right now? Are you making plans a year out? Are you thinking in 1 week at a time, you know, 3 months? You know, how are you approaching that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I have, when this all started, after 2 weeks, I think I thought about this question, what time frame am I thinking? I started thinking in phases. So there's phase one, that was this total lockdown that right now is ending here in Germany as well. So businesses are reopening, and today our And it's the 30th of April, so just for the record, our different Bundesländer, the chefs of our different states, are discussing how services are able to start again and so on. So phase two is now starting, and phase two is for me a thing where we have this mixed situation where some things are able and others are not. And I am right now thinking in a time frame for until the end of the year. So that's my time frame right now. I think this second phase is going at least until the end of the year and maybe beyond that. But that's the time frame I'm thinking in. And then is phase three. And phase three is when everything is going back to normal, when there are no restrictions anymore and so on. And so this phase two is the most important one for us, because we now have to find a situation or a state where we can be for a few months, and so I'm expecting this to be in this state for at least 6, 7, 8, 9 months.
Yeah, I think we haven't thought about it. We haven't talked in those phase terms, but that makes a lot of sense of our situation where. We are now starting to talk about lifting the restrictions, although there will be modified restrictions. Mm-hmm. And the question of not being able to gather as one group is going to persist. I think we're going to end up with something like you can have gatherings of up to 50 people or something like this. And, we have in our tradition, because it's hierarchical and somewhat liturgical, so you have the priests are connected to the broader church diocese through the bishop and under his authority. And then we have deacons under that who are not just these kind of practical people, but they're sort of assistants to the priests and they're ordained. And so I think what we're looking at is a situation where we convene these smaller gatherings, maybe 20 people, yeah. And the deacons are there. We've got several, so we've spread out our clergy. And that's a way of keeping the connection between them, even though we're spread out geographically or in different locations. But, one of the things we've talked about with our church members as well is just this is highly irregular and difficult for us, but in some sense it puts us in solidarity with church around the world in certain places where they can't gather in one big body, and thinking about those churches that are persecuted or live in places where it's not legal or not acceptable to be a Christian openly. And so we're just trying to think about every possible connection we can with the church globally and through history and say, let's analyze our situation in these terms. This is a kind of exile, of a sort. And yes, that's bad, and we lament it. But God is present in those situations. It's a time to remember that the normal means of grace, the Eucharist and gathering. Yes, they are the normal means of grace, but God is not tied to those things. He operates outside of them, and so I think we just need to have a lot of confidence in those. The fact that the normal means of grace are not the only ways that God acts, and we can, we have to be a little bit pragmatic and think outside the box right now.
Yeah. So to round this up a little bit, last question would be, what are the long term maybe things you'll take out of the situation? You have talked about some right now. But what are your learnings? What are you learning from this for your long-time ministry? What has changed maybe your perspective a little bit about you and your ministry? What is negative things or positive things you are taking out of this experience you are going through right now?
Well, on the positive, there are a lot of negatives. We have several church members that have now have the virus. None of them are hospitalized. We have immunocompromised people that will probably not be able to be back in church regularly for some time, as you mentioned. On the positive side, like I mentioned earlier, we are, you know, we're a largely white church, although, you know, we really care about the city and we talk a lot about caring about justice, but in reality, we haven't always been known how to connect with, you know, lower class and people of color in our city. And so through this situation and this care form that we have, we're starting to connect with some people that we wouldn't have before. And so we think we've actually expanded this benevolence ministry in a way that can be a long-term thing and become a bit of a fixture to our church. And that's exciting. There's also some real opportunities to rethink some things. You know, in church leadership, you know, church builds a culture, and there's a lot of great and important things about that, but things get stuck in a rut, and you can't just say, I want to change how we do this. Even if you want to, it's very hard. And this, in some ways, allows us as leaders and as a church in general to change some things, to have an opportunity to rethink how we do things. So our small groups, to strengthen those. I think in the next year, those are going to become more of a central focus of our church and allow people to build some closer relationships on a smaller group level and spend time in prayer and fellowship together. Even as we de-emphasize the large gathering. So those are exciting things to me, because I think in the, you know, longer term picture, they can strengthen the church as we come back online. And so, you know, we're hoping that is a real opportunity for us to reach some people and to build up the community in our church. And I'm just trying to, you know, always plan for the worst, but look for the opportunities in this to see what is it that God, what doors is God opening through this. So,
okay, thanks. That's great. So thank you for your time. Thank you that you were so open to this interview, and thanks for your perspective that you are giving us here in Germany. And so let's finish this up. I wish you all the best for your ministry, for all the changes before you, and all the thinking through, not only with you, but with your peers and all your colleagues and members. And I wish you all the best for your future in Washington. And
Thank you, Carl. It's a real honor, and it's great to connect with hear a little bit about what's happening in the church in Germany. So thank you so much.
Okay, then, bye.